I'm Diana Fleischman from The Vegan Option. That sting was by Rob Masters, and this is my complete conversation with Professor Peter Singer. You can hear the edited program from December 2011, Peace on Earth, at theveganoption.org.
Evolutionists who say that they want to eat like our hunter-gatherer ancestors ate. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it's very
So what does that mean in principle? They're sort of wild game cells?
They say they eat organic, but they don't eat any potatoes. They don't eat any wheat. There's one guy who in particular is very much in this movement, and he bragged to me that he eats Inuit levels of animal protein. But he's eating like chicken and things. I mean, obviously Inuit eat whale meat and stuff like that.
Yes, seals or whatever, right?
Yeah, so I don't really understand. But they don't eat any dairy because that's obviously not what our hunter-gatherers ate. So it's a very strange state of affairs. Okay, so I don't want to keep you forever. So I'll just launch right into the first question we've been asking people we've been interviewing. What does peace on earth mean to you?
Peace on earth means that there would be a cessation of violence, and that would include, in my view, not merely violence by humans against other humans, but also violence against non-human animals.
And do you think that there ever will be non-violence or peace between humans and non-human animals?
I think there will always be some conflicts, but what I would hope is that one day we do our very best to resolve those conflicts in a way that has at least minimal harm to non-human animals. So, depending on how you define violence, I guess that I could say yes, I hope that that will one day end. But at the least, I hope it will be minimized to the absolute last possible degree.
So that would... How do you mean exactly? Do you mean that we would stop using animals for food, or that we would farm animals humanely? How would you conceptualize that?
Well, I think ultimately we would stop using animals for food because I think that we would recognize that we would have a better attitude to them if we didn't, and that that's better than farming them humanely. I mean, this would be a stage of moral evolution, I think, that we're not out yet, but that we might one day get to. But the conflicts I was thinking of, really, were not so much conflicts about using them for food, because there I think it's clear that if we're talking about ultimate ideals, we would have alternatives to that. We already do have alternatives to that. I was thinking about the more difficult conflicts, like we need to produce food for ourselves, we need to farm, and that involves... involves taking over land that no doubt is home to animals, and we clear sites where the small animals might live. So those are the more difficult questions that you could really only imagine being properly resolved in some more future, distant future utopian kind of world.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So in Pinker's chapter on the animal rights revolutions, he mentions a few reasons why he thinks that the rights revolution for animals has not gone as far and will not go as far as those of other rights revolutions. So these include questions of where you would draw the line at sentience, questioning the limits of other carnivorous species. So he kind of makes this joke, would we give grizzly bears soy meatless moose patties? And the facts that our interactions with animals are often zero sum. He says, animals eat our children, they give us diseases, those kinds of things. So do you agree that there are limiting factors like these? Do you agree with Pinker to how far animal liberation can actually go?
Well, certainly I agree that there's a limiting factor about sentience. I mean, I'm really only concerned about animals insofar as they're capable of experiencing something, of feeling pain or of pleasure or wanting life to go well or badly in some sense. So if, for example, there are animals that are not sentient, and I think that's quite possible given that oysters or clams are animals after all in a biological sense, then I don't think that animal liberation needs to go to include them. I mean, you might say, well, we can't be certain they're not sentient, so we should give them the balance of doubt. But if at some stage we arrive at greater certainty, I think then that would be the limits of how far animal liberation would go. Now, the other points that Pinker raises relating to wild carnivores are more difficult questions, certainly. And if we want to continue to preserve natural ecological systems, then I guess we have to leave carnivores and we have to leave them their prey. Some philosophers have speculated that maybe it's not worth doing that, the amount of suffering they inflict, and that it would be better perhaps even to get rid of carnivores. So that's a, you know, that's something that, that is a possibility, that we decide that the suffering they inflict is so great that it would be better to have a to get rid of them once and for all, so that the world doesn't have that kind of suffering in it. And other people, of course, think that that's outrageous and that there's it would be causing wonderful species to become extinct, and it would be an act of human domination over nature, which is quite wrong. So, so there is a there's plenty of room to debate those questions. But I think that they are, at least at the moment, not really questions that we need to be concern ourselves with practically, because you know, while we're raising in brutal fashion and killing maybe 50 billion animals for food each year, I think the behavior of carnivores, you know, is not going to be something that we can afford to be critical of. So I think that's a sort of a theoretical possibility rather than a serious practical issue.
Yeah, I agree with you. When I was reading that chapter, I was thinking that, you know, the women's rights revolution wasn't constrained by the fact that we weren't sure if we weren't going to be able to emancipate women from pregnancy. You know, that's not something that we were thinking about when we were trying to get women's suffrage, you know, that kind of thing. So I think that he kind of, I mean, in my personal opinion, I thought he put sort of these false constraints on how far animal liberation can go, as opposed to other kinds of rights revolutions.
Yeah, it's something exactly. It's something of a distraction at this stage anyway. And, you know, maybe some feminists have speculated on whether women should be freed from pregnancy. That there has been discussion about that and whether that would be a good thing. But it's a different matter. And as you say, it has nothing to do with whether women should have the vote or the right to own property or the right to compete with men for the same jobs at the same pay. All of those basic things are completely separate, and just as questions about factory farming and how we ought to treat animals in labs and so on have really nothing to do with how we make these difficult decisions about the conflicting values of preserving carnivorous species.
So in Pinker's thesis, he says that interest in animal welfare and morality towards animals has increased. He shows some graphs, you know, for instance, reduction of use of animals in movies and increase in vegetarianism. And then at the end of his book, he starts talking about sort of civilizing factors in society, like the Flynn effect, which you mentioned in your review. And I was wondering, what aspects of society and civilization do you think are ushering this increased care for animal welfare and morality towards animals on? And do you think they will continue?
I broadly agree with Pinker about the civilizing tendencies of post-18th century civilization, and I guess thinking particularly of Western civilization, but I do believe that a lot of these tendencies are universal and are extending to other places. So I think that there are many factors. One is basically thinking for ourselves, freeing ourselves from tradition and just doing the same thing because it's always been done, or perhaps even because it's a religious ritual. Those are factors that we can think for ourselves. We discuss them more openly with others. We have more information about it. We have a better educated general public. Perhaps, as Pinker suggests, we're able to think more clearly and better as our civilization has become more complex, and we spend more of our time using symbols and understanding things in more abstract sense. That may help us to think about these moral issues. In general, I think that there has been this long-term trend to expand the circle of morality. That's, you know, I wrote about that in the book, The Expanding Circle, that Pinker draws on and further develops and adds to the understanding of the kind of phenomenon that I was trying to describe. So I believe that that is still continuing, so I think that we are continuing to make progress.
Yeah, and there has been some data showing that vegetarians are have higher IQ, but I'm not sure how much I believe that.
Well, I mean, it's not impossible, because I think there's data showing that there's some correlation between people who think for themselves about ethical issues and are able to think and discuss ethical issues and IQ, and that's not really surprising that should be so. So it's not impossible.
Thinkers, animal rights people like Gary Francione say that animal welfare is only increased because it's more economically efficient for producers. Things like controlled atmosphere killing, you know, limit carcass damage. I actually mentioned this to Pinker. Steven Pinker, he also said that, that's a very cynical view. For instance, the abolition of slavery was greatly endorsed by the Quakers, and they were interested in ushering on the Industrial Revolution. So you can always say that people might have these ulterior motives. But what do you think about this particular argument that it's actually not an increase in moral thought that's increasing animal welfare? For instance, like castration without anesthetic, that's not really being debated as something to abolish, but something like the way the chickens are killed is being considered for abolition.
Oh, but look, what the big debates have been about confinement and factory farming. I mean, by far the biggest change in agriculture over the last 20 or 30 years has been in Europe in particular, the elimination of veal crates, of individual sow stalls, and now of the standard battery cage. And in the United States, in similar way, the elimination of all of those forms of confinement in California, which is the result of the 2008 referendum, which is just starting to come into effect, and similar moves that have happened in a few other states. I mean, this is costing industry a very large amount of money and is undoubtedly contributing to an increase in the price of animal products. I mean, a modest increase, but the reason that these forms of confinement and factory farming came into effect was because they could economically outcompete the traditional farmers who didn't put their hens in cages or didn't put their sows in stalls. And it wasn't going back because of economic change. It only went back because the public got involved and demanded it at a political level. And so I think it's complete nonsense to say that the advantages in animal welfare are for economic reasons rather than because of increased public concern about animal welfare. I don't know why anybody in the animal movement would really make such a negative, cynical kind of statement.
Well, thank you so much. Hold on. My producer has a question.
Yes.
oh, sorry.
Hey, Professor, sorry. Partially because we had a bit of a problem with the audio over Skype. I'd like to...
Okay, sorry. So he just handed me a question.
Semi-repeat.
I'm sorry. Are we heading towards or away from peace on Earth? And then I promise that's the last one.
I believe and hope that we're heading towards peace on Earth. I believe that we have been making moral progress over the past few centuries. We still have a very long way to go. And I'm certainly not going to live to see true peace on Earth, but as long as we're heading in the right direction, I think that's encouraging.
Thank you so much for talking with us, and it's been really an honor to speak with you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.